This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. We are living in a war zone. The grocery wars are underway. It's being fought by big grocery guns like Harris Teeter, Publix, and soon the nation's top supermarket, Wegmans. These combatants may be fighting this war using fresh produce and Cocoa Puffs, but the outcome promises to have an impact on you. The question is why, after years of hegemony, is Harris Teeter suddenly under siege? What is driving this invasion of new players? What's at stake? Aside, of course, from the price of steak. Let's find out. Phil Lempert is a supermarket industry analyst for supermarketguru.com and the food trends editor and correspondent for NBC's Today Show. He is also a contributing editor to Supermarket News, and he joins us by phone from Palm Springs, California, where by my count, it's very early in the morning. Phil, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm great. And with us in our Spirit Square studio is Katie Peralta, retail and business reporter and the What's in Store columnist for the Charlotte Observer. Welcome to you as well.
Good morning.
I should say that you used to be an intern on this program. How about that? First time for an intern to become a guest. When, Katie, from your point of view, did the grocery wars start in Charlotte? When did you start noticing something going on?
That's a really good question. I would anticipate that it started probably when the population started to boom. Maybe, I don't know, a decade ago, maybe we started seeing it a lot more. But Publix only started in North Carolina last year. Or no, I'm sorry, 2 years ago in Ballantyne opening their first store. And since then, it's been a war with Harris Teeter, which of course is our homegrown grocery store. So I think it's most recently picked up maybe in the last couple of years, I think, is what people are noticing.
You know, for the longest time, Harris Teeter would have a competitor come into the market. Hannaford's came into the market for a while, and they would try to establish themselves, and they could never do it. They would just kind of sneak out of town with their tails between their legs, and Harris Teeter would just go on. How did that change?
Well, Publix is brand new, obviously, and they're trying to offer, you know, all the shoppers something that they don't have, you know, whether that be, competitive prices, whether it's like a clean store format, whether it's convenience like the one that you see in South End is walkable to a lot of apartment complexes. They are looking for the same customers essentially as Harris Teeter. So Harris Teeter obviously is fighting back, and it's getting very competitive between the two. But I think, people love Publix, especially the out-of-town people that move here from Florida, and that's what they're used to. Down there, Publix is like their Harris Teeter.
Yeah. People do love Publix, Phil. I don't know how much you know about Publix. I guess you know a lot because you're in the grocery business, reporting business. What is it about Publix that people just they crave it? When they find out that it's coming, they get all excited about it like it's a mink coat coming.
Well, I think we have to remember something, that Publix is an employee-owned chain. Harris Teeter is now owned by Kroger. And Publix, for many generations, has been run by the same family. They now have a new CEO. But they really have a very loyal audience, not only with their shoppers, but also with their employees. They really take excellent care. They're innovative. Their produce department, their prepared foods department, their stores, they've always gone out of their way to do what's right. And if you take a look at these grocery wars, and I agree, by the way, that this really started with the influx of the population and the shopper has changed. We're now being led in the food world by millennials who are more passionate for food than any other generation that we've ever seen, more demanding, which is really creating throughout the entire country a new way of shopping and a new way of acquiring foods. And frankly, I think that you're at the epicenter of what's going on, but you're going to see this flow through to the rest of the country.
This is actually happening in the rest of the country. This, from what I've read that you've written about this, that this is not particular to Charlotte. Grocery wars are happening everywhere.
Correct. On one hand, you've got retailers like Harris Teeter and Wegmans and Publix that are very service-oriented, still having larger stores. On the other hand, you have Aldi, now with over 1,500 stores, and Lidl starting to build stores throughout the country. We're really going to see a big change in the way we buy food. We're going to have these small 10 to 15,000 square foot stores. We're going to have these full-service stores like the Publix and Harris Teeters of the world. And then let's not forget about online and home delivery. You know, we have more Instacart cities than ever before where we can choose what retailer we want and have it delivered. We have more supermarkets now in the delivery business, so we don't even have to go into whether it's a Publix or a Harris Teeter anymore. And then you've got the whole meal kit phenomenon from Purple Carrot and Blue Apron, which people are gravitating to and eating home more because all the ingredients have been portioned out. It's controlled, portion controlled. It's only about $10 a meal, and it's unique ethnic foods, for the most part, that we wouldn't even think about making ourselves.
And those are not grocery stores. Those are services that ship you. You pre-order your meals, and they ship them to your front door, and all you have to do is put the ingredients together and some cook them, or sometimes just open the package, I would guess, depending on what it is.
That's correct. However, let me just jump in with one thing, Mike. This phenomenon is not new. Publix actually started this meal kit, but you would pick it up in the store probably close to 20 years ago. So they would have a recipe stapled to a brown paper bag, having all the ingredients in it, priced, you know, as a package, and you would bring it home. So now it's just gone onto the internet, but it was really Publix who innovated it.
I guess we're the epicenter, as Phil said, Katie, a second ago, because not only is our population growing, and it has been growing for about 10 or 15, 20 years now, but we're also growing in that money category, the millennial category. We have a lot of millennials moving into Charlotte, so that makes this war even that. You're a millennial, right?
Yes.
What do you want out of a grocery store that hasn't been around when your parents were shopping for and still are shopping for groceries?
The great thing about being a millennial in Charlotte is that we have so many options. And millennials are smart shoppers, and so they do want a great deal, but we also want convenience. So that's why a lot of grocers, I think, are probably scared about talk of Lidl and Aldi coming into the market, because they do offer a lower price point that is very attractive to millennials. And if those are in, you know, if those are in areas that are convenient for us, if they're walkable, that's going to be a no-brainer. So I think, you know, as a millennial, speaking as one, I shop all over the place. I don't really have a loyal store that I go to all the time. It's just basically whatever's closest and whatever's offering the lowest prices.
Why was it, Phil, that Harris Teeter was so successful in keeping competitors out of this market for so long? They didn't keep them out, but they never succeeded against Harris Teeter, so they disappeared. But now that's not happening. Has there been some sort of a shift, or is it the sale of Harris Teeter to Kroger? What's going on there?
No, Kroger's a great company. Let me start there. And their division 8451, which really looks at the data analytics and customer analytics, has really put Kroger in a premier position. So it's not anything to do with Kroger. And I think that partnership and that purchase makes a lot of sense and does well for both. I want to go back to Katie's point because I think that the market has changed. Harris Teeter hasn't changed. Harris Teeter's customer used to be baby boomers, then aging baby boomers. And as, you know, Katie said, she doesn't have loyalty. One of the trends that we predicted back in August of last year for this year when it came to the food world is called retailer agnostic, where it doesn't make a difference where Katie shops. It's what's convenient. It's what's there. The average millennial is shopping for food 9 times a month. Compare that to the average American, which is only 6 times a month. This is the generation, and Katie, I say this respectfully, that says you only live once, and they never want to eat the same meal twice in their lifetime. So as a result, you know, as a result, they're on this constant search for what's new. If you look at how the millennials have changed recipe development, for example, you know, for baby boomers, it was Martha Stewart's cookbook. For their parents, it was Betty Crocker's cookbook. You know, for millennials, it's Instagram. And they don't want a step-by-step recipe. Oh, take a quarter of a pinch of salt and do this and, you know, get a chicken and cook it for 30 minutes. They look at a picture on Instagram. That's it. And they then use that as innovation to create their own unique recipes. They love cooking. They're passionate about cooking. And frankly, they're also leading the whole trend when it comes to sustainability and transparency. If you look at all the surveys that are out, millennials are picking the foods that they buy based on who the company is, what the company stands for, their labor practices, what's the impact on the environment. It's a whole different set of rules. And we look at Aldi in particular. We don't know yet about Lidl, but looking at what they do in Europe, it's going to be very similar to Aldi. Aldi has removed MSG from all its store brands. 90%, 9-0, of what's sold in their store is their own brand. Their foods win awards globally for high quality. And as Katie said, it's 30 to 50% less than going to a Harris Teeter or a Publix.
You've been nodding a lot as Phil has been talking about this in recognition of what he's saying.
I think I agree about lots of millennials being retail agnostic, but it has to be acknowledged that here in Charlotte is where Harris Teeter started. Mm-hmm. And here people are oddly fiercely loyal to Harris Teeter in the way that they're loyal to Krispy Kreme, Cheerwine, and Bojangles. They're passionate about it, even young people. So I think that there has to be some kind of distinction, and I'm speaking as a transplant millennial as well. People that are from here, that are born here and raised here, do go to seek out Harris Teeter, whereas someone who, is just closer to a Publix might go there out of sheer convenience. So I think, maybe there is a distinction here in Charlotte. We're a little bit different. But at the same time, also we have to acknowledge that Kroger did lower prices on thousands of items at Harris Teeter when they acquired it. So a lot of
and they could do that because they have a bigger distribution network than Harris Teeter had by themselves.
Absolutely.
Correct?
Yes.
Is that why this semi-loyalty to Harris Teeter from both baby boomers and millennials who have grown up here in Charlotte, is that why, Phil, you think that the Publix-Harris Teeter war is a really interesting war?
I think that's part of it. I think you're also going to see Wegmans coming into the market. I think you're going to see a lot more competition than ever before. I don't think it's about loyalty. It's more about advocacy. It's more about consumers today telling their friend, oh, have you gone to the Aldi? Have you gone to the Harris Teeter? It's much more community spirited, especially again centered around this millennial discussion about food. It's about community. It's about conversation. It's very different than the baby boom generation who really looked for being a very individual person or an individual family who did things on their own. With millennials, it's all about groups, and groups go shopping together. And if you look at this new trend in grocery called grocerants, which is the combination of having a grocery store and a restaurant combined. Wegmans has done it well. Hy-Vee has done it well. Mariano's in Chicago has done it well. I think you're going to see that really starting to grow in Charlotte as well.
We only have a minute left in the segment, but when chains like Publix and Wegmans come into a brand new market, do they just bring themselves to the market the way they've always operated, or do they change things to tailor it to that market and to the competition that they're trying to beat in that market?
Tailored to the market, no question about it, in 2016. It's tailored to the market.
Okay, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about Wegmans, because this is a store most of us have never heard of, and they are scheduled to come to, of all places, Cary. Why Cary? But eventually, probably into the Charlotte region. We're talking to Katie Peralta, who's a retail business reporter and the What's in Store columnist for the Charlotte Observer, and Phil Lempert, supermarket industry analyst, supermarketguru.com, and the food trends editor at the Today Show. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Charlotte Symphony, presenting Symphonica, a signature Night Sounds concert featuring works by Latin American composers, plus an interactive light installation on stage. Christopher Warren Green conducts two performances on Friday at noon and 7:30 p.m. Info at charlottesymphony.org. You know, it isn't just apartments that are popping up around town. Art is too, and poetry. They're called wall poems, and you'll find them on buildings and other surfaces. And a lot of local artists are working to get more art into public spaces and engage you in the process. So we're going to meet some of the people behind these unique art installations and find out how they create art that represents the neighborhoods they occupy. And we'll do that tomorrow morning at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, voter turnout in primaries and caucuses is typically low, but this time may be different. Several candidates are counting on the motivation of non-traditional primary voters. Who's likely to vote in the early contests and why it matters?
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the grocery wars that maybe you have noticed, maybe you haven't, are underway in Charlotte, and they're heating up as new competitors come into the marketplace. Let me share some things that have come in while we've been talking from people on email and Facebook and Twitter. We're here with Katie Peralta from The Observer and Phil Lempert, the food trends editor for The Today Show, and with SupermarketGuru.com. Chris writes, observations from a shopper. Harris Teeter is getting on my nerves. Two carts can barely pass each other. There are obstructions everywhere. And yes, I know why they do it. Also, every Harris Teeter has terrible deli service. Publix meat department stinks. I go to Aldi for all the basics. Harris Teeter or Farmer's Market for meat. The Fresh Market for prepared foods. This is another trend which we haven't talked about, and I don't know which one of your columns, whether it was you, Katie, or whether it was Phil writing about this, but shoppers today, particularly millennials, think nothing of going to the butcher for meats, the farmer's market for produce, to a supermarket for staples, whereas my mother wanted to get it all done in one place at one time and be done with it. This harkens back to my grandmother's day. That's what she did.
It's rather European, too.
Yes.
And it definitely should be said that probably these folks that are doing this maybe don't have kids yet. We have time to do that. Shop around. Look for the best deal. Look for the best, you know, whatever it is you're cooking. Like you said, people are passionate about the meals that they make these days. Maybe they have something particular in mind. But as a grocer, that would probably scare me a little bit.
Yeah. Is this happening all over the country, Phil? If, for instance, the Harris Teeter, the Publix deli is better than Harris Teeter and the Harris Teeter bakery is better than the Publix bakery, I'm just making all this stuff up here. Do people seek that out? They just go for a cake at one store or the other?
Absolutely. And a lot of the reasons for that is also besides quality information. What we want to do, just as your grandmother did, is go to the person, the butcher, if you would. They could tell you everything you wanted to know about the products. We've really moved away from, you know, and I hate to use the term big food, where, you know, a certain factory would make everything for everybody in the country, to a lot more local. And there are some downsides to local, and we'll talk about that in a second. But seriously, you know, people want to talk to retailers who know their stuff. They just don't want to get in and out of that store. They've made too many mistakes. We look at the amount of food waste in this country, which is about 40% of all food is wasted. That's a combination of supply chain as well as what you and I buy, you know, and then we bring it home. We just don't like it, so we toss it, which, by the way, we should never do. We should always bring it back to the store and ask for a refund. But the reality is, in this new era, again, not to be repetitive, but led by millennials and being picked up by baby boomers, we want to know everything about our food. And the traditional supermarket isn't able to do that. So we're seeking out different places that have these experts, if you would, that could answer our questions.
So we talked a little bit about Wegmans before we went to the break. Eli on Facebook writes, Wegmans is hands down the best supermarket on earth. Seriously, watch out, Publix, Harris Teeter, Walmart, and buy low. It can't come soon enough. Now, it's coming to Cary, not to Charlotte, although, Phil, you have written that you can't open one grocery store if you're not from the region. You can't open one grocery store. You must open others. It doesn't make sense to ship products to one store from the Northeast, which is where they're from. What is it about Wegmans that gets that kind of praise?
Well, again, similar to Ed Crenshaw, who was CEO for Publix for many years, Wegmans is family-owned. Danny Wegman, second generation, his kids and his sister are in the business. This is a company that takes really good care of their employees, really trains their employees, cares about their shoppers. For example, Danny, I want to say about 4 or 5 years ago, got a lot of requests through their consumer Service Department about tomatoes. And what he decided to do was invest in a tomato farm so that he could be assured of the highest quality tomatoes possible for his customers, and actually went to plant a little bit earlier, so when it came time for vine ripened tomatoes, you could only find them at Wegmans for a week or two. This is a very smart family, a great merchandising family, and great stores. And I agree with that Facebook comment. Maybe not the best store on the planet, but really close to that. They are a terrific organization, wonderful people, and really care about their customers. And I mentioned this grocer on trend. They were one of the ones who started it with, I think they're up to now, six different formats of grocerants that are attached to their store. They want to be your supplier for all things food, and they will be. And by the way, moving to Cary, I think, is a very smart move, because when you get into Charlotte, you're really in the midst of competition. Get into Cary, and the same way when they went to the New York metro area, they went to Princeton, New Jersey. You know, they didn't pop a store in the middle of Manhattan. You know, they're going to learn there. They're going to get more space there. And in fact, I'm going to be in Cary in a few weeks, and my hope is to visit there and visit that location and just see what's around there to be able to predict the future a bit.
Even as grocery stores have been getting smaller, we'll talk about that trend because they're opening, even Walmart is opening up these smaller stores. Wegmans is about twice the size of your average grocery store wherever they open. What's that about? I mean, why are they so big?
Well, again, they're all about service. They are big. The rumor is, and I can't say if this is true or not because I just don't know, that Wegmans is also experimenting with a smaller format. Hy-Vee started experimenting with one about 2 years ago, and they just opened it up. You know, it's a combination of a lot of things. And not to get political for a second, but the $15 minimum wage, this is going to change a lot in retail, especially in food retailer. We're seeing a lot of food co-ops come under pressure because, you know, the volunteers at co-ops, frankly, in many states are in violation of the Fair Wage Act. So we're going to see that shift. We're really going to have to see how this comes out. Now, Walmart closing about 150 stores here in the U.S. is not only about the $15 minimum wage, but part of it is that. We've got to understand that, yes, we do want everybody to make a fair living wage. That's critical for the growth and sustainability here in the U.S. However, we also have to realize somebody's going to have to pay for that. And, you know, when we see those headlines come up that, you know, milk is going to go up, you know, 50 cents, we freak out. We get out our picket signs and we go in front of supermarkets and so on. Well, the money's got to come from somewhere. Either it comes from the farmer, the producer, the retailer, the consumer. Somebody's got to pay for all this. So that's why a lot of these stores have really gone to the smaller format, like Aldi. Aldi has very few employees that are in the store, a lot of automation behind the scenes so that they can get the products on the shelves as inexpensively as possible, which is why they can offer those great prices.
Let's talk about prices. You're a millennial, Katie, and you've talked about how millennials shop and how they don't have loyalty to a particular grocery store, but they'll go to Publix and they go to Harris Teeter, and Harris Teeter and Publix are among the more expensive grocery stores in town. They can't match the prices at Whole Foods, but they're up there. And yet you also mentioned Aldi, which, as Phil just said, they're a lower price store because of all the mechanics that go on behind the scenes. What's more important to millennials, price or whatever Publix and Harris Teeter are perceived to offer?
Quality, location, which is convenience.
So when you think of Aldi, do you think of quality and location, or do you think of price?
It's interesting because I don't know much about Aldi personally. You know, I know what I've written and what I've studied, mm-hmm. but I've never shopped there. So I think that's going to change very quickly here in North Carolina. They've been hiring thousands
of... I have, and it's a very different experience than going to a Harris Teeter or a Safeway. It's very bare bones. As Phil pointed out, the products on the shelves mostly are their brand. And so I knew nothing about Aldi. So I didn't know whether I should buy that box of whatever it was because I've never had an Aldi product. Who are these people? I had no idea who they were, but it's very bare bones and it's fairly inexpensive and it's the produce was good.
Right. It's kind of just what you need. Not a huge selection is what people are saying. And I think once they position themselves in really strategic locations around this city, it's going to be interesting to see what people gravitate toward because I think that could be a huge draw for millennials here.
Yeah.
Let's not forget about one thing, which is very important. Aldi, about 40 years ago, bought Trader Joe's. So they have a lot of learnings about the American consumer from that whole Trader Joe's experience. And while it's very separate companies, again, family-owned company out of Germany for both, Aldi has learned a lot from the whole Trader Joe's experience.
I didn't know that Aldi owned Trader Joe's, and I was going to bring Trader Joe's up into this conversation because that seems to be a very millennial shopping experience. I love Trader Joe's, and I'm not sure why, to be honest with you. There seems to be a mystique about Trader Joe's, and one of the network newscasts this week reported that houses within a mile radius of a Trader Joe's or a Whole Foods sell at higher prices.
That's interesting. And they say that Trader Joe's positions themselves very strategically and they expand very cautiously into a market. We have just a handful here in Charlotte, but where they're located sometimes to me is perplexing. You look at the one in the Metropolitan, which, Phil, I don't know if you've been to this one, but it's
a challenge.
No.
It's a challenge, but it's still slammed all the time. So people do seek it out. Those prices are a bit lower, but you would kind of compare it oddly to a Whole Foods in that they stress, organic. There's a lot of the ingredients are there and they have samples out and it's very easy to navigate. So I, as a millennial, of course, I can say that people do love it a lot. And I think,
And they have great prepared foods.
Absolutely.
At very low prices. I don't know how they do it. Speaking of which, how do they do it? If Harris Teeter or Whole Foods is more expensive than Aldi, why? Price is very important to the average grocery shopper. They really do not. They don't want to overpay, but they do want quality and they want what they want. So how do some stores get away with selling things much cheaper than others?
Well, Whole Foods has been kind of reeling from the whole paychecks reputation that is kind of ubiquitous, and you can understand why. A lot of their products are at a much higher point than Harris Teeter, Publix, any of the more traditional supermarkets, but they also do really well in their prepared food, and they do offer those grocerants like Phil was talking about.
You know, when you buy certain products, non-food products, sometimes you're willing to pay more because if you pay more, you are perceiving that you're getting a higher quality product, that you're getting what you pay for. So if you pay nothing, then it's obviously just it's a throwaway product. You use it for a season and throw it. You toss it, even though it may be a high quality product. You didn't pay anything for it. It's the same thing true for groceries. Is perception reality? If something costs more, it must be better. Is that what consumers think?
That's a baby boomer talking. That's not a millennial talking. Katie would never utter those words.
Yeah, she looked very perplexed when I was saying that. What are you talking about?
Exactly. We have to remember that our population constantly is shifting, whether it's from seniors to boomers to Xers to millennials to Generation Z. And with every generation, retail must change and evolve. We've seen so many stores go out of business, and I'm not even just talking about food stores, but other retailers, look at the Gap. The Gap was hugely successful with boomers, but just couldn't make it with millennials. You've got to have people at the top who are really willing to take chances to shift. And I think that, in Charlotte, you're seeing that, as I said before, going on, and the rest of the country is looking at Charlotte to see how this is going to play out in the food world, in the supermarket world. And it's so important to stay ahead of those trends, not behind them. And, if you take a look at the marketing of food to a baby boomer was, oh, let's put it in a glitzy package. Let's come up with, a cute story on the back. Don't worry about what the food is, just put whatever crap you want in there, but if the package looks great and it's a high price, baby boomers will buy it. And they did. You look at the Snackwells phenomenon. When Nabisco introduced Snackwells, you know, it was phenomenal. Oh, my God. You know, this was a 120-product line of cookies and crackers, and it was fat-free. Well, baby boomers didn't read the ingredients and started getting fatter because of Snackwell.
Exactly.
And finally turned it around and said, oh, it's loaded with sugar. You know, millennials are very different. Millennials are reading those ingredients. They want to know if it's GMO or not. They want to know if it's organic, if it's local. You know, what's the source of the sugar? It's not about, you know, just putting the word sugar in there. Is it cane sugar? Is it beet sugar? So you've really got a whole new way of looking at food. And again, sustainability and transparency is key.
So, Katie, if the whole grocery world is marketing and trying to attract millennials, what's most important to you? Is it price? Is it quality? Is it convenience? What's going to keep you coming to my store?
Yes to all those questions. And that's a challenge. Which is why we're not loyal to any. You know, if I need, for example, some odd ingredient for a cocktail that I'm making, and they only sell it at Fresh Market, which is a North Carolina company.
You'll go there.
Then I'll go there. And that means that I'll pass Harris Teeter. That means I'll pass Publix.
So when we now live in a world that's not A&P and Food Lion. It's Food Lion and Bilo and Harris Teeter and Publix and Fresh Market and Whole Foods and Aldi and soon Lidl. When we live in a world like that, as these grocery wars heat up and more players come into the marketplace, what do we as consumers get? Do we automatically get lower prices because everybody's fighting for the same dollar? Or do we just get more choice?
Both of those things. When there's more competition, prices are always going to be competitive, of course, and the consumer is always going to come out somehow on top. And because you have more options, you have, you know, grocery stores fighting to make the experience of shopping more pleasurable. I mean, Publix's slogan is where shopping is a pleasure, and they do their very best to make sure that it is. So I think when there are so many options as a consumer, it's only going to be a good thing.
Hmm. Let me share
and
some.
Also,
go ahead.
I'm sorry, yeah, Mike. If I can build on what Katie said, when we look at choice, choice can go one of two directions. And I think the choice can be having 100 bottles of olive oil on your grocery shelves for people to choose from, or, and I think that's the old model, or it's more curated products. So what we're starting to see now is a retailer saying, you know, I really don't need 100 bottles of olive oil that are basically all the same. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take a really high-end one from France. I'm going to take one of the major brands that might sound Italian or does sound Italian but comes from Tunisia or Spain. I'm going to take a California olive oil. I'm going to have my store brand. And I'm going to have Mike's olive oil that's, you know, made in Charlotte. And I'm just going to have those six choices there for people, but they're really going to be different. So it's going to be exciting for them. They're going to try different things, and it's not going to be about Me Too-ism. It's going to be going to a store that has those six olive oils, which as compared to a different chain might have a different six olive oils.
Phil Lempert is a supermarket industry analyst with supermarketguru.com and the Today Show. Katie Peralta is the What's in Store columnist for the Charlotte Observer. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Ballet's Innovative Works, a dance performance with new contemporary ballets, plus a reception with the artists after the show, Friday through February 20th at the Center for Dance Uptown. Tickets at charlotteballet.org. Voter turnout in primaries and caucuses is typically low, but this time may be different. Several candidates are counting on the motivation of non-traditional primary voters to come to these events. And on the Diane Rehm Show coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, they'll talk about who's likely to vote in the early contests and why it matters. That's coming up. If you'd like to join our conversation about the grocery wars, now's your chance. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. And we're coming right back.
Mm-hmm.
This week on All Things Considered, just days until the first votes are cast for president in 2016, we're following candidates as they make their final case to Iowa caucus goers.
They throw all this stuff at me, and I'm still standing because I've been on the front lines of change since I was your age.
Plus, we'll have the latest on the Republican candidates and their last debate before caucus night. All Things Considered, your source for what you need to know this election year. Listen every afternoon.
Weekdays from 4 to 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the grocery wars today on Charlotte Talks. They're here. They're underway. Perhaps the salvos are going over your head. You just haven't noticed yet. Phil Lempert is with us, the supermarket and industry analyst. He writes for a number of publications, including SupermarketGuru.com and Katie Peralta, retail business reporter and the What's in Store columnist for the Charlotte Observer. Let me share with you some things that have come in. We have tons of comments that Everybody goes grocery shopping, so everybody has a stake in this. Kim writes, can your guests comment on what happened with Walmart? I understand they are now closing stores nationwide, and we're at a point to be a large threat to Harris Teeter and many other grocers. How about Amazon's pantry offering? Will that become a competitor to services like Harris Teeter's Express Lane, which I love, by the way, she says.
Here in Charlotte, I don't think that online shopping is ever going to take over traditional.
Why not?
Because it's not quite as dense and urban as a New York City or a Chicago. I think that for people who have really busy schedules, who can't get to the grocery store every week, that kind of service would be absolutely necessary.
And I don't want people picking out my tomatoes for me. I want to do that.
Some people might not care. Or maybe they just need the essentials.
Phil?
Yeah, but I think it's a blend of what both of you are saying. I think that, to Katie's point, the concentration of New York or other cities make it profitable for somebody to do home delivery like Fresh Direct. The key to Fresh Direct's success financially is never having to move the truck. You know, you go through the Midtown Tunnel, you park the truck, and then for the rest of the day you make deliveries to a certain blocks in
right.
New York. I think if we take a look at what's going on with driverless vehicles and drones, that could change, but we're certainly not there yet. But I think what we're seeing is a blend. I think to your point, Mike, nobody, you don't want anybody to pick out your tomatoes. I don't either. But you know something? I don't want to buy, Charmin and Bounty and bottled water, those regular items that I know I'm going to use, that I like the brands, I'm satisfied with them. So we really see a very different combination, that now with all the smart scales being installed in refrigerators and in cupboards, so I plug into my computer once that I never want to run out of toilet paper. Nor does anybody else. So what happens is every time I take a roll of Charmin out of my cupboard, the scanner and the weight on the scale knows that I've taken one roll out. So it's keeping that replenishment in real time. And when it gets to the point where I have two rolls left, it's automatically going to send an order to whether it's Amazon, Instacart, Harris Teeter, whoever. And I'm going to get a delivery of my toilet paper. So it's really going to be just-in-time delivery that's automatic, so that when I do go shopping, I have the time to look at the tomatoes, to look at the produce, to talk to the meat manager, and I don't have to worry about those staples that I never want to run out of.
But just like tomatoes, don't you want to squeeze the Charmin before you pick it up? No, I'm just kidding. Larry in Matthews writes, Trader Joe's has great help. Under a minute, you can find a staffer to ask who stops whatever they're doing, who walks you to where you need to go. Fresh Market is a nice store with high prices. Seems to me no one on the floor to ask for help. Ashley on Twitter, I'm loyal to the Buy Low on the Plaza. Best prices and gas rewards in town. I hope Publix never buys it. Bill from Matthews, what about the membership stores, Costco's, BJ's? What about Walmart? What about Target? How do they impact supermarkets?
So we have been talking a lot about Harris Teeter and Publix, but Walmart is still the top grocery store in the Charlotte region. Not by much, and it's still losing its competitive edge as more players come into the market. The club stores are also huge. I mean, Sam's Club is the fourth biggest grocery store in our region, which might surprise some people. But because, you know, because the mass quantities you can buy there, you know, people are loyal to it. They know that they can get good prices. BJ's is another one that commands not a lot, but a some market share. So I think people
– You didn't mention Costco's.
Did I mention Costco?
I don't think you did. Maybe I was.
Costco falls right about in the middle of those two.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I got to tell you, price their home their store products are amazingly good.
I would have to agree with you.
You also have to understand that Costco changed the supermarket business. Before Costco really decided to get into food, and again, keep in mind it was really the merger or acquisition with Price Club that put it over the top, Sam Price, his philosophy was to really merchandise, even if in a warehouse setting. So they were the first ones to change the model of sampling. What would happen is a traditional supermarket would hire the oldest living person in Charlotte, give them a rickety card table, a filthy toaster oven, and let them sample Friday and Saturday between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m., the busiest times. So what Costco did is they said, sampling sells. What we're going to do is we're going to build beautiful sampling stations. We're going to be sampling from morning to night, and we're not just going to have one person. We're going to be sampling 10, 15 items at a time, so it becomes an experience. It becomes an extravaganza, and that's what really put them over the top in food. When it comes to quality of food, Mike, I agree with you. Their quality of their own store brand is terrific, and in fact, their meat is probably the highest quality that's sold by any retailer in the country, and at some of the best prices. And also, they actually do more inspections for E. coli on their meat than the federal government does throughout the entire country. They care about food. And you really want to understand that Costco's model for membership goes beyond money. But if you buy a product, a food product that's being recalled, what Costco has is they have these robo-dialers that calls you up that says, hey, Mike, you know, you bought XYZ product. It's being recalled for whatever reason. Please bring it back to the store and please don't consume it. This is called building a relationship about food, which is why Costco nationwide continues to do so well. And even though Sam's, who's a great retailer and obviously part of Walmart, does similar things, you know, the people at Sam's just don't seem to be talking to the people at Walmart to understand this shopper relationship.
Okay. I was going to say, Phil, too, I had a question. I know I'm supposed to not ask questions.
Oh, you
here.
Can ask questions.
Because they sell such a large mix of non-consumables, does that help their profitability?
Absolutely. There's no question. You know, you take a look at the mix that Costco or Sam's or BJ's has, and it is well planned out. You know, people are going there for the food, but as you go for the food and you see that, you know, widescreen TV for $5.99, you know, you're going to pick it up. So, yeah, strategically, they have placed their food departments in a way that you've got to pass by a lot of impulse items. To be honest with you, I would never buy a toothbrush from anybody except Costco. So I'll go into Costco and I could buy 10 name brand quality toothbrushes for 10 or 12 bucks. And I go to a traditional supermarket and that same product, you know, two of them will cost me $7. So their merchandising is brilliant. You walk into the store, you never want to leave. Even I remember years ago on Oprah, you know, I did a number of segments, and one of the segments is I took three audience members, gave them each $100, and brought them into a Costco, and we brought cameras in, and we, you know, watched them. You know, each of the shoppers, and they were all female, took one of those huge flatbed carts. So you look at that, and you go, oh, I got to fill that up. And they were just piling stuff on it. And there was one woman, and I forgot her name, but she was actually a police officer in Chicago. And she took, you know, that package of 100 rolls of toilet paper. So we get back, you know, we show the tape of them doing it, and Oprah then turned to this woman and said, you know, how long is it going to take you to use 100 rolls of toilet paper? And she said, Well, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 months. And then I said, well, where do you keep them? And she said, I really don't have space. So I divided it between my garage and here and here and here. And that whole aura of merchandising and buying, you know, more and more, as you point out, in these environments, you've got to really be smart. So my tip to consumers certainly is if you go to these warehouse clubs, make sure you have a shopping list and keep to it. Otherwise, you'll definitely overspend.
And that's why a family of two needs a 4,000 square foot house if they shop at Costco. Just for the storage.
And three refrigerators.
Keith on Twitter writes, Wegmans is the best supermarket I have shopped at. Western New York transplants consistently say the thing that they miss from home is Wegmans. Priscilla, originally from Allentown, Pennsylvania, I'm listening to your show on supermarkets. As a recent transplant from the Northeast, Wegmans by far outpaces and surpasses both Harris Teeter and Publix. I have shopped at Wegmans for more than 10 years. Carolina, you will love this totally complete, family-friendly, incredibly priced, excellent store. Can't wait till they come to Charlotte. Holy cow. Let's talk about some of the amenities that people are looking for and that grocery stores are now beginning to offer. I got to tell you that the Harris Teeter at the corner of Providence and Providence, Queens and Queens, was a little puzzling to me when it first went up because it has an elevator. It's a two-story grocery store, and I thought, how impractical is that? But a lot of people are doing it now. A lot of stores are doing this. But now these grocery stores are putting in wine bars. They're putting in these grocerants. Let's talk about that because that's a new word for me. It's an in-store restaurant. Whole Foods has one. What's the deal there? Why do people want to go to a restaurant in a grocery store?
At Harris Teeter, they're trying to make the shopping experience an experience. And because Publix boasts that as its motto and they're its biggest competitor.
All I want is a box of cornflakes. I don't need an experience.
But Harris Teeter is also offering things like I've heard that they have like happy hours at those bars where
yes,
a glass of wine is like $4, which is great. But I think when you look at that compared with Publix, which, you know, a lot of the times they're building these grocery stores like directly across the street from each other, like you're seeing at Cotswold, for example.
Right.
It's just another way to give themselves an edge. I mean, we also haven't talked about like gas stations. Harris Teeter's adding gas stations, which Publix does not have. Harris Teeter's also adding growlers, which are huge among the millennial crowd.
Yes, what's a growler?
It's these big huge jugs you can take away craft beer from. So it's like a holder for craft beer. And then they have these, draft – I don't know what they're called. I can't think of the word right now. But
like they have draft beer on tap.
On tap, thank you.
Okay.
Bunch of taps of craft beer. Obviously, the craft beer scene here in Charlotte is huge. So basically, you can take away craft beer, and that's just an extra amenity that you probably wouldn't see a lot
so
of.
So we're going to have a lot of drunk people walking around grocery stores. Is that right?
I don't know about that. But technically, you can drink wine while you shop. So that's.
Well, you wrote about outside Charlotte, you wrote that Harris Teeter is opening their biggest store ever in Pinehurst. That's 90 miles from here. It'll have a gas station, a soup, and am I right about this? A wing bar or a wine bar?
I think it was wing.
A wing bar. That's what I thought.
I might not be right.
A
about
beer
that.
Bar featuring 16 beers on tap, a growler station, a meat smoker, a juice bar, a walk-in humidor, and more. Are they reacting to public demand for these things, or are they just trying to be creative?
This is an interesting one because, like you said, it's 90 miles outside Charlotte. It's not like there's not a Publix nearby there, so it's not like they're reacting to anything. I'm not sure if this is something that we'll start seeing more of from Harris Teeter, but it certainly is. I hate to use this word, but it's, you know, it's cliche, but it's kind of unprecedented, and it's something people will talk about. It generates a lot of buzz, so maybe it's something that, you know, they're just doing to kind of draw people in again. I don't know.
And also keep in mind that a format like that says to the community, we want to be all things food. So, you know, it's not true, Mike, and I hate to tell you this, that you only want cornflakes when you go into a supermarket. You really do want that experience. You walk into the produce department of a store, and you, between all those colors and the aromas, you know, it puts you in a good mood. Most people really do enjoy that supermarket shopping experience. So you know, it's about the involvement with food. And if you take a look at certain areas like Mariano's in Chicago, you know, their oyster bar is the hot pickup place in Chicago on Friday nights. Their pork barbecue has been named the best pork barbecue in Chicago by Chicago Magazine. Oh. So you look at these stores, and especially 90 miles out of Charlotte, mm-hmm. there's probably not a lot of else going on. I don't know. I've never been there. But to create a store like this means that not only are you going to buy your groceries there, this is where you're going to watch the game on Sunday. This is where, you know, you're going to go with your friends to sit down and have a meal during the week. This becomes the center of the community, and our communities are much larger now, so our stores are much larger to accommodate this and more services. And if you look at the whole growler phenomenon, which is throughout the country, it started in Portland, matter of fact, what people love about it is, you know, you get your empty growler, you go up to the tap, you fill the growler, and then they seal it for you. So again, being more involved in food versus just picking up, you know, a half a gallon, you know, jug of beer off a shelf is a whole different experience.
I have less than a minute left. We've talked about Walmart, Harris Teeter, Publix, Aldi, Bilo is here, Lowe's Foods are here, Trader Joe's, Whole Foods, Fresh Market. How many different supermarkets can a city this size handle, support, keep in business?
I guess it depends on how fast we keep growing, right? We're not showing any signs of stopping. So, you know, it still seems as if competition is ripe here in Charlotte.
Will there always be a market for a great big supermarket as well as smaller specialty supermarkets?
I would say that, yeah.
Yes, you said yes, Phil? Absolutely.
Yes. Absolutely. And again, to Katie's point, I think that population growth, and also keep in mind that you could have 100 different banners of stores. Doesn't mean that you have to have 1,000 stores. It could be that you have retailers, you know, that Green Tomato, for example, up in Portland, that has 2 or 3 stores and does a really good job, and that's okay.
And let me stop you there. Phil Leppert is a supermarket industry analyst for SupermarketGuru.com, food trends editor and correspondent for NBC's Today Show, and a contributing editor to Supermarket News. And Katie Peralta is the What's in Store columnist for the Charlotte Observer.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production.